Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
All right, welcome back, ladies and germs, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. We finally gone pro. We are now coming at you nice, sharp, and clean with brand new audio equipment. Thanks to your kind and generous donations through our Amazon link on our website, which is saturdaynightfreakshow.blogspot.com. Just reminding you that you can buy any of the movies that we talk about, including this one, on our website. You can also get a hold of us at facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. You can comment on this or any of the episodes that we've done, and we will read your comments on air during the Igor's mailbag segment, which we have coming up later in our show.
Later. We have one segment. All right, let's not get.
There's the movie review, we have one the segment, and the wrap up.
That's three segments. Three segments. Should we add some more segments?
I think we should add more segments, actually. That's of my opinion. But
there you go. So this is your internet radio superstars.
This is Brent.
Travis.
Jenny.
Sean.
And I'm Colin. And every Saturday we do this. You may or may not have realized this by now. On iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and more. And every week we pick a movie, going through our batting lineup. Tonight, Brent chose the movie. Brent, what did we watch tonight?
Colin, we watched Celebrity.
And who directed the movie Celebrity?
Woody Allen.
And in what year did he make this movie?
What was it, 97?
I think 98, I think.
98?
Yeah.
You're probably right. He probably made it in 97, released 98. Yeah, right? Well, that sounds close.
True.
How many movies, I'm curious, has Woody Allen released through Miramax?
Through Miramax, I want to say at least, oh my God. Let's see. There's Mighty Aphrodite, Deconstructing Harry.
Well, I mean, was there a point at which he went over to working with them and everything subsequently was a Miramax? Is he still doing stuff through them?
No, because he's went back to Sony Classics. Like his earlier stuff.
What's one with Scarlett Johansson?
Matchpoint.
Matchpoint,
or there's one.
I don't know if that's
Card
Miramax,
or. What the fuck is it called?
Scoop?
Maybe it was Scoop.
Card?
The card. No, one where there's somebody's like a fucking, nope, don't remember. I think it might have been Scoop, though. Was that Miramax?
Or
Melinda?
With fucking Wolverine. Wasn't he in one of them?
That was Scoop,
yeah. That felt like Miramax.
I don't think it was, though. I'm not sure. I'm completely wrong. I'd have to go back, because those are actually the Woody Allen movies I don't really care for. Christina Barcelona, whatever.
Vicky Christina Barcelona. Yeah, he had that era of those movies.
Yeah, anything with a Black Widow.
Scarlett Johansson and like Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't care for those Woody Allen
movies. How many Woody Allen movies have we watched on the show so far?
Fucking three or something.
Yeah, three
it's
or
like four.
Four.
I think it feels like it's four.
No, we watched Bullets Over Broadway, Deconstructing Harry, this, which is Celebrity, which we said.
We didn't do Radio Day. Oh, no. Play It Again, Sam.
Play It Again. So this is our fourth.
Jesus Christ. Woody Allen is getting more play on 150 odd episodes.
Zemeckis on the Freak Show.
I know.
I got to do something about that.
Somebody will be usurped.
How many Zemeckis movies do we have a running tie?
We've done Back to the Future 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, okay.
That's like one.
Christmas Carol is.
That's like two.
Four.
Death Becomes Her.
Death Becomes
That's
Her.
Like three.
That's five. That's five.
Well, we got like 40 more Woody Allen movies to go through. So
these are
all
the two,
in good time.
The greatest directors.
Turn into the Woody Allen podcast.
I think of it.
I wish. The two great directors.
No, if it was a Woody Allen podcast, every podcast would go the same. I mean, even though I fucking love Woody Allen, but, you know, his. Not that his subject matter is the same, but his characters usually go through
his
the same.
His characters exploring the subject matter.
It's always what choices have I made in my life? What choices did I make prematurely? Can I cut off this long-lasting relationship to go with something I think is going to work out, but then once you go with that new thing, it doesn't work out how you think it is. It's all about almost how you see how things could go in your mind. You act on it. And then, like, oh, fuck, you know, you have this, like, harsh realization that, like, no, this is all,
Is the grass greener? Oh, shit, it's not greener.
And that's what I like about, I mean, I think Celebrity does show this in a better way than a lot of his other movies, because, I mean, we're looking at the cult of celebrity. We're looking at people that just fucking love people, like, no matter what, for any fucking reason, right? I mean, this movie... I mean, shit, the start of this movie is our Kenneth Branagh. What's it?
Branagh. How did you pronounce it earlier? Branagh.
Branagh.
Branagh. Kenneth Branagh.
But so his French. Character is a it's type French. Of some sort of a Hollywood reporter or something like that. They really don't say.
He's a journalist of some sort.
Yes, right. Yeah. Something of a. But like his first interviews with Melanie Griffith, right? Where
she's a star that he's interviewing.
Isn't he a vacation journalist? Like he writes for a vacation.
He
magazine,
was, but I think he had that crisis and he changed.
Yeah, he's
his,
trying to amp up his career.
Yeah.
So this is what I actually want to do, aside from being a novelist. But
but just the fact that we go from Melanie Griffith to Kenneth Branagh's, I can't say his name.
Branagh.
We go to his ex-wife, Branagh. His like recently divorced wife, who is at some sort of like a monastery. And right there, like right from your introduction to the monastery is like a bunch of people sitting around waiting for a popular television priest. You know, so like this whole movie goes through who are the celebrities. There's people in comas that are like, oh, you know, they're famous for just being in a coma.
Yeah, I like there was the guy that what happened? He was in some sort of disaster, and they were like, it's on all the news, and he's like,
he was kidnapped.
Yeah, what's he famous for being kidnapped? Yeah.
Well, I was wondering, you know, when you were saying, I mean, Travis has obviously seen a lot of Woody Allen movies. He's your favorite director,
yeah.
I would say. So, is you know, you were talking before about how, you know, his characters are always seeing the grass greener on the other side. What's the best statement of that in one of the movies that he's made? I mean, I realize he also makes different stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, Match Point is very different. Shadows and Fog is very different. I mean, like,
my
you know,
favorite version of that story, I mean, it's not really the same version of it. I mean, I don't necessarily
know. The Purple
know how
Rose
much I
of
walk.
Cairo? Where
well,
she
no,
literally, you know, takes off with a dream, you know. She goes to a movie theater, then the guy comes off the screen to take her into, like, a fantasy land.
I like, my personal version is, I like Sweet and Lowdown with
Sean Penn,
where he's a musician that doesn't think he needs, like, other people or whatever, but he's really just kind of in denial. And then at the end, when he's kind of alone, you know, he really has that realization that, like, you know, I made no commitment towards anybody because I was my own personal, whatever, priority. And once he sees that he's going to be alone, he's just fucking distraught. But like I said, every movie has this kind of same idea that you're married and things aren't working out the way you imagined that they'd work. I mean, it's all about imagination, right? It's all about how you imagined a relationship was going to work out. It's all about how you imagine this new one's going to work out and seeing, like, reality. Fuck it. I mean, Husbands and Wives is a really good one that shows this, because there's a character in that movie specifically that, like, divorces a woman for a younger woman, but then, like, he sees that this younger woman she doesn't understand the same things that his, like, quote-unquote boring wife did, right? He thought, oh, I'm getting this young, new, like, fresh, exciting thing, but it's like this fucking chick doesn't know anything. She's so fucking young and stupid, she, like, almost doesn't have the same reference points as him.
But they're saying, I mean, like, it seems like that's like a, you know, an ongoing thread with the Woody Allen character. I mean,
right, and he finally zeroed on it for an actual movie.
Well, I mean, I think that's really, I mean, that's the human story, right? Everybody makes decisions. You gotta make your decision and stick with it. And then once you do, you gotta be like, is this good? When do you give up on?
Well,
like, if you start feeling like your life is in a slump, when should you give up on it and start something new? Or when should you stick it through and hopefully things will kind of work out? Because, like I said, this movie, Kenneth Branagh is I mean, this guy, he's obsessed with celebrities, right? I mean, maybe it comes from his job, maybe it comes from just the society we live in, but, like, everybody he meets, he's just like, oh my god, you're such an inspiration, how did you do this, how did you, and people, like, I like in the beginning of this when he's, well, he goes out with Charlize Theron, who's, like, a model, like, when he goes with her to all this, all like her inner circle or whatever, the people she's hanging out with, like everybody is looking past this guy. Like he's like looking really intrigued in what they're saying. He's trying to have a conversation, but they're ignoring because he's not a fucking celebrity. You know, he's just another fucking dude. Where they're like, oh, Charlize Theron, you know, or whatever the fuck. Not she wasn't Charlize Theron, but you know, right. The idea that they're people only pay attention to celebrity. It's really. Fucking kind of weird. In a weird way, I kind of feel like this movie, I'm like going all over the place just because it's like, holy shit.
One thing at a time.
Yeah.
It was too much. We had too much buildup. Too much holding on to it. Just like, blah!
Oh, we should mention that it's filmed in black and white.
It is black and white.
Okay,
movie.
I got a question
like
about
that. Joke that they made, like that. He's one of those like pretentious actors that
only films in black and white.
Yeah, directors that only does his movies in black.
Why was this movie shot in black and white? I guess that's the question. When black and white is used as a device in a movie, like is it? Does there have to be a reason other than just?
You could save on lights. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like other than like, yeah. You know what I feel like making a black and white film. I mean, usually it's supposed to. I mean, I assume right. Because we're at the point where we can shoot in color, we see in color. So to do something in black and white is to make you think
black
of
and white has
old
more weight,
movie.
You know, it just has more weight to it.
Well, because it makes things stark, right? I mean, you're taking things down to a decision, say, to like a black or a white without a gray.
Yeah. And that's definitely what I think. Because like what Travis is saying, you know, about the themes of this film and. Like really, what it's about is a choice. You know, either you want this, or you want what you have, or you want the thing that you might be able to get. You know, and I mean, with black and white, it strips down all of the distractions. Mm-hmm. I guess it's just you're just looking at this. You know, and it's the pretentious answer, but I think that's what I think that's what he's trying to show. You know, that it's like. It's black and white. It's this or it's
I mean,
that.
He has always went to black. I mean, he's got Manhattan, mm-hmm. Stardust Memories, Zelig.
Shadows and Fog.
Shadows in the Fog. I mean, he's always just went back to black and white every once in a while. I'm sure he just, you know, those are the type of movies he grew up on, I'm sure.
Yeah, but some of them, I mean, like Shadows and Fog, you know, you're trying to do like gaslit London murder mystery.
Right.
It's that kind of sense. Doing that. Yeah. I mean, it feels like that's, you know, it's a crime to shoot those movies in color. But, you know, on some of the other ones, it's like, is it just a stylistic choice? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but is that all there is to it?
I mean, who knows? Maybe it's budget. Maybe, I mean.
I would almost think that it would cost more. I don't know.
I was thinking, like you said before, like if you want to save on lights, but I think you have to, like. As far as lighting goes, specifically light more if you're going to do a black and white movie. Like,
yeah, but you have
be
more
specific
opportunity
with that.
To, you know, you're not worried about necessarily like how many different colors or. I mean, you have sure. One type of light or whatever, and then like, where's it going to go? How far is it going to be?
Does it light my actor?
Yeah, does it light the actor? You know, or something? Just because, like, I don't see a lot of like halo lighting in his black and white movie. I mean, he puts a light up somewhere and usually you can see the harsh shadow. I mean, he usually doesn't even hide that. Like when Charlize Theron is walking away from the car, I mean, you can see her harsh shadow,
right.
But mm-hmm. It's like, fuck it. It's black
but
and
that,
white. You're not
well,
gonna
that
think
might
about
be
it.
Part of, that might be part of the style, right? That we were going to do these harsh shadows and, you know,
right. But he's not getting so specific that he's hiding an actor in shadow or doing anything like that.
No,
it's yeah, he's not going that far.
It's not as artistic as that.
It's still, like, naturalistic.
Yes.
Right? I guess. Even though, because it's shot a lot like his other films. I mean, even though, because it's the Swedish guy, Sven Nykvist, right?
Yeah.
Well, I want to say that maybe that guy had something. He's done, like, Ingmar Bergman movies and stuff like that, right?
Sven Nykvist?
Yeah.
Nykvist?
Yeah, I mean, he's considered one of the great cinematographers of, like, all time. So he comes over and he does this movie, and it's like, they're not doing anything special with the frame, it seems like. I mean, I'm not a cameraman, so, I mean, I don't know, you know.
I think they are.
But different, that's something that stands out other than, you know, different than, say, deconstructing Harry, the way that was shot.
Specifically, there's conversations that they have. I can think of one in particular when towards the end when Kenneth Branagh and when Winona Ryder shows up to that dinner they're having, like, this, you know, they're out for drinks or whatever. Winona Ryder shows up with Hank Azaria, and the camera, almost like a Tarantino movie, it kind of does this thing where it's moving behind the characters at the table, but it's focusing, like, there's crosstalk, so Jean Grey, what's her
name? Yeah,
Famke Janssen.
The lovely Famke Janssen. Lovely.
Yes, she's talking with Hank Azaria, and then Kenneth Branagh and Winona Ryder are talking, and they're on opposite ends of the table, and the camera, it's just doing this weird, like, it's not weird, it's kind of brilliant, but it's doing, like, these pans back and forth.
Showing, like, crosstalk. It's showing, like, what it's like to be in two conversations, like, talking across another conversation.
Well, yeah, you know who else does that? Robert Altman, like, in all of his movies.
Altman likes crosstalk.
Well, there was a couple of shots.
People talking over each other.
Yeah, yeah, because it's trying to capture how realistic conversation happens. Altman, I know, they said he would go and, like, mic everybody in a set. And then, so the actors didn't know, like, where the camera was looking. So you were, like, always, as an actor, on. Because the camera could be looking at you, or in the mix later, he could be listening to you.
And that's something and that came from, like, 1930s films. Like, that came from, I mean, if you even go back and look at the original Mystery of the House of Wax, I mean, people are talking, I mean, that's what back in the day they realized, oh, this is the difference of realism versus, you know, stage shit, is having people talk over each other.
But
who directed Mystery of the House? Mystery at the Wax Museum.
I'm drawing a blank. I don't know. I don't know.
But in this, and I know what you're saying, but in this it feels like it's still very controlled. Like, you know, like almost like certain conversations go to a whisper when other people are talking, and then they pick it up, you know, it's probably the sound guy or something, but you're picking up on very specific moments, like, you know, like he's asking Winona Ryder, like, how she met Hank Azaria, or, you know, and then they go back and Hank Azaria's talking about the, you know, this article that he just finished writing, or that they were in California, and, like, they continue talking, but it's just like they pick up on certain very specific moments that I think are
scripted, timed out.
Then. Yeah,
yeah. You feel like they have to be very disciplined. But if it's to not do this kind of dialogue in this,
well, but that's like if say that's a sound engineer. You know, they're controlling in the editing process. They're controlling who you're hearing, and, you know, you're raising and lowering people at whatever time.
But you have to do that
that's
time.
That's part of it. Yeah,
you got to work out the timing. So, but like, when I slide the camera from, say, you to Jenny, that, you know, or sorry, I guess it'd be past Jenny to Sean, then you'd be able to catch, you know, your conversation, what she's saying to Brent in the crosstalk, and then, like, over to Sean, which is talking back to you. I mean, there has to be, like, that moment where, you know, there's a line that she says it's important, so we got to catch that and go, you know, in that slide. Yeah. I always think that stuff's like, because it sounds like, you know, like you were saying, that they have, like, this freedom, or maybe not. You're saying it's very controlled.
I think it's very controlled.
And it's down to it. But it sounds like, I guess maybe the effect is that you're actually listening to actual people talk. Yeah. Right.
But I think it's very, I think to get it feeling so, like, free of, you know, just being a conversation between people, I think it's very controlled. Or I think the actors have to be very disciplined in order to pull that off.
Right.
Well, especially he catches it in long, unbroken takes. That scene in the restaurant, for instance, where the Judy Davis character is going around interviewing all the celebrities are at the restaurant, where it's just like, I mean, if you fuck your lineup, it's on camera, you know? I mean, like, it's just an unbroken deal through that whole thing. Lots of the wonders.
So since you brought her up, I want to get back to talking about just the character story of this movie, and not necessarily the filmmaking process. Mm. But, like, okay, so what you notice about this movie is, so Kenneth Branagh is a some sort
as
of
as it should forever be pronounced.
I can't. Yeah, Branagh? Dude, I've been looking at that name my whole
Branagh.
Life. I just can't do it. Branagh.
Branagh. And he's
Branagh.
Really quickly, that performance that he does in that movie has to be, like, I mean, a great understated or unrecognized performance. Maybe it was. I don't know. Got to go back and look. But he's playing Woody Allen.
He is. Yeah. He's Woody Allen.
Most Woody Allen movies that don't star Woody Allen. Like, that's why he got whatever works. Damn it. Larry. Larry David.
Oh, Larry David.
You know,
yeah.
You get those people that, like, you know, he knows who kind of can sound like him in a weird way or who can be as insecure. But, like, okay, I like the idea that, okay, so this guy is kind of a writer, kind of somebody. Regardless of his, just his journalist writing, you know he's a script writer and you know he's writing novels, right? Mm. And I think
frustrated in both counts.
Well, but this is a theme I think that runs constantly throughout this movie. The fact that people that are worshipped as celebrity don't appreciate the people worshipping them. That's why he got divorced, right? It's because his, you know, obviously a wife loves you. A wife, like, obviously kind of like dotes over you. So he gets bored with it, right? But then he is trying to capture the attention of all these other celebrities around him. And then when his ex-wife kind of gets found by Joe Mantegna. There's something very peculiar about you. But so he turns her into like a newscast star, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you get to see that again at the end of the movie where he's like, oh, look at you. I mean, he's right back there. Like, she's now a celebrity. Now he can fucking obsess over her. Same thing with Phoenix. Or not Phoenix.
And, DiCaprio?
No, not DiCaprio.
Charlize Theron.
Yeah. Jean Grey.
Famke Janssen.
Once again, here's another person in his life that thinks she thinks he's a brilliant writer, right? You need to write your novel. You need blah, blah, blah. And he gets fucking bored with her. Like, when someone's doting
her. He screws her over so bad.
Yeah,
too.
Oh, so the bad. Moving the people day of.
She's moving into so his good. House, and he breaks up with her that morning.
I know you're going to think I'm an asshole, but I got to say this.
But even, like, okay, like, he meets Winona Ryder on the set of the movie that Melanie Griffith is
right,
making.
At the very beginning.
And right away, he's like, I know you. Oh, yeah, I was a waitress in this place. And, like, just the fact that he recognizes her and, like, really, like, you know, she gets off on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then later in the movie, when it finally gets down to it, fuck it. You know, she gets bored with it. So this whole movie to me is about when you obsess over celebrity, those people get bored at you, but you as a person that obsesses over celebrity, you're only happy with people that are going to obsess over you in that same weird way, even though you also don't appreciate it. Like, no matter how fucking, like, little you are, you also don't appreciate it when someone, like, is just like, you're brilliant, oh God, write your novel, I can't wait to see it, blah, blah, blah. You just start to lose fascination with people that are fucking so about you.
Yeah, they did that. They did it in a nutshell with Charlize Theron's character. Just like very, she's only in the movie briefly, but she's so conceited and vapid, and she just
everything's about her.
Well,
and she says shit like the whole thing about how I'm.
Do you have any flaws?
I'm completely fucking sexually aroused by everything. It's like one of those things. Like,
it's a flaw.
Yeah, it's
like
a weakness.
Is that true, or is that just an attention getting device that I'm going to make you think sexually
definitely
about me?
Attention getting device.
To,
for sure, it was.
Yeah,
well, the second point of that, you know, it's like I get the celebrity worship thing, but there's also I think he's making a criticism about the imagination that we pour into the celebrity, right? The image or whatever, because it's kind of illustrated in the scene with Winona Ryder when he meets her for the second time at this dinner, and then he, you know, goes off. He leaves Famke Janssen like the next fucking day after he has a chance encounter with Winona Ryder for the second time in the movie, and he's telling her, you know, it's like, you are this person who I know everything about you. And he does have, I guess, the first time that he meets her, the ability to point out three things about her off the top of his head that are virtually true.
But it's very romanticized, you know?
Right.
In a weird way, playing to her ego, right?
Yeah.
He could just be like, I dream about you.
You know, but that's the thing. I guess that's what you do about the celebrity culture, right? You see yourself in the dream that you're seeing on the screen. It's kind of like it plays as a dream. The movies or the whole cult of celebrity. So he's doing it with this girl and kind of like, this is, you know, I've dreamed you up. I wrote about you in this book and I wrote about you in this book. And, you know, then the actual reality, when it comes down to it, ends up suffering because she isn't the person that he, in the image, you know, she's not that held to that
it's
image.
It's the same thing with, what's the ex-wife's name? Damn it. I can't think
Judy Davis.
Yeah, Judy Davis. Same thing with her, right? You get to see how mentally
we will pronounce
like,
nobody's names right.
Mentally fucked up she is, right? Like you get to see her whole struggle with like what she has to deal with. Then by the end of the movie, when she becomes this reporter, another like normal looking person walks up and is like, "Oh, you're perfect. I love," like they didn't see how much of a mental fuck up she's been pretty much up to this point, right? They're just giving her all this, like, "Oh, since you're a celebrity, your hair looks perfect, you dress beautiful, you're so friendly, la la la." They don't see that from the beginning of the movie. I mean, she's psychologically fucked up, you know. There's something that happened. Well, just the divorce, I guess, really. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing that Woody Allen...
Well, she's got other issues, too.
And those are, I think those are real fucking people, right? You're told that this is going to be your life, A, B, C, right? You find someone you love, you get married, you have a family, you live happy. Once someone rejects that, you know, you're like, well, what the fuck is wrong with me? You know, what if this is... If life goes A, B, C, and you rejected me, obviously, you know, there's something incredibly fucking wrong with me, and... I just really like how Woody Allen tackles that subject, really time and time again. Like, I really don't think you can get bored with it, because I think that's the human story. Once again, like, even though he's made 40 movies kind of based on the same fucking thing, I think you can tell it again and again and again, because it's like, this is what everyone fucking goes through. This is every human being's fucking experience on Earth.
You can relate to it.
Everyone can relate to
it. At least in one of those movies.
At least in one of his fucking movies.
Right. Well, I guess it's a thing. Like, if the movies, I mean... I've seen enough of them to say, you know, that they're not all interchangeable, but there are times it seems like when he tackles certain subjects and shoots them in a certain way and casts like the same people that it does kind of feel like it's all one, you know, long running movie. Like if you come in like, you know, 2 hours, like after deconstructing Harry got out, it feels like, you know, you could pick it up again in Celebrity, right? Or
has,
you know,
has he ever had characters run over from movies?
No, not as far as I know. He just does use a lot of the same actors just because it's kind of that, you know, once you find people that work, you fucking stick with
them, right? They're your people, yeah.
A lot of New York actors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he just, he's always had that, right? He started off with Diane Keaton and kind of morphed her into a good actress. Then Mia Farrow fucking got her an Oscar. Scarlett Johansson. He finds these certain people.
I think he's got muses at certain points.
I think I think very for much sure. So. Oh yeah, yeah, because it's like, why
especially
else
over
would
multiple
he,
movies.
Yeah, yeah, continuously.
Like he's
over
seen
something's
like, oh, I like them. And
like
then,
now, I want to say, I think his new dame is
Emma Stone.
I think she was in
a couple of them.
She was in Magic in the Moonlight. Yeah. Mm. I don't know if she was in...
She might be in...
She might have been in a few other...
Or she might be in one other one, or she's going to be in another one.
But yeah, I'm saying she's like the new picks, one, right? Yeah. Like Scarlett Johansson was the one from the early 2000s, right? Made fucking, what, at least like 4 or 5 movies with her? Vicky Cristina Bartolona, Scoop. Match Point.
Yeah.
Like, you know...
That's interesting because, you know, that's basically what Kenneth Branagh does with Winona Ryder. Winona Ryder. She becomes his muse. So maybe Woody Allen's aware of it. And so he projects that into the character.
Yeah. Well, how much of that's the question is how much of these stories that he tells are like his own personal therapy session, you know? I mean, it feels very personal. And, you know, and I guess that's why it makes me wonder. You know?
But I think that's what makes a good entertainer, right? A lot of people that see a stand-up are just, oh, Woody Allen's this neurotic nerd. It's like, that's a fucking character, people. Do you think Jerry Lewis is just like, oh, lady? You know,
yeah,
like
to be able to write with the authority, I think, that he does on these subjects, it feels like...
But he does stick to one subject. Yeah. Real, I mean,
but that's not like a neurosis.
Well, but see, I don't think so because most filmmakers, to me, stick to one
subject.
Woody
Allen is all neurosis.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but every human is neurosis. I don't think Woody Allen is neurosis because I mean he's been married for like 40 fucking years.
Yeah,
it's in a weird situation, but like
and his muses seem to get old, and then he like goes for a younger one, right?
Isn't that,
or whatever.
Yeah, isn't that
Scar Joe is aged out, so Emma
Stone. Therapeutic, he's writing. He's vicariously living through these.
Right, that's what characters. I guess. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
that it feels like that's his. This is the stuff that's keeping him alive and keeping him sane and keeping his marriage, you know, functioning and you know whatever
it's
other facets.
Better than really
like,
doing it, right?
I mean, right. Yeah.
Acting on it, I guess.
Yeah, because I guess that's what it is, instead of acting on it.
Right.
Because, I mean, I still, like, I don't know. I mean, I think that's what makes a good writer, you know, because, I mean, once again, this guy's been nominated more times than anybody else for best screenplay. I mean, this guy's the fucking nominated motherfucker.
Well, he writes like 12 movies a year.
Yeah, right.
But like you're saying, like, that's what makes it. I think he can identify the shit that does this
because
for him.
Who couldn't, right? He's really looking at the dark side of humankind.
Well, he
right?
is,
he's
but
looking
he's seeing,
at that.
Like,
seeing,
he's identifying stuff that maybe people like experience but can't like pin down. But he can
there,
do it.
Are they too pussy themselves to go through
right,
the major changes in their life? I mean, that's why through
right.
his characters.
But he can identify it, and he can, you know, write about it, and he can somehow, you know. He can get it out this way.
I gotta tell you, that's the one thing I've learned from Woody Allen movies is to fucking to dump a chick at the most awkward time because that's what the right it's the right thing to do. Even though, I mean, that's what I love about because like I mean, what Kenneth Branagh was doing, I mean, it was the right thing to do. As soon as you fall in love or you think you're in love with somebody else, you can't possibly live a lie with this other person.
But he's
so,
looking at things like, all right, he's seeing examples like, all right, you should have done it then, and he's doing it. In the movie, like, he's identifying the spot where you should have done this, and he's making the movie and showing, like, people actually doing it at that time. Like, I'm sure he's seen people do it, like, and go through their lives and not having not done, like,
so he's
not dumping the woman at the
be,
time.
That's
but,
gotta
and
be
he's,
everyone,
and he's
right?
Made, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, people go through their lives and then don't do the shit you see in his movie. He's identifying the spot where, like, yeah, you should have dumped her at this moment right here, and he's doing that in the movie.
I like that the ex-wife, she actually has that line about, like, what do you do when you're 40 and you've, like, weighed your life out in a, what'd she say, like a teaspoon-sized...
A coffee, something about
she makes
coffee.
Something
yeah, yeah.
about,
and
like...
a coffee spoon,
and
yeah,
I think
yeah.
that's a fucking brilliant idea, right? I mean, there's unlimited possibilities to what your life could hold. Mm-hmm. And just because of whatever reasons, schooling or marriage, I mean, we really try to get focused on, oh, no, this has to be the path. But it's like, well, fuck, but your life could be anything you want it to be, regardless if it hurts other people, regardless of the moves you got to make it happen. But it could happen. Like, right now, everybody right here could change their fucking
right.
lives
I can
tomorrow.
Make a few decisions right now that would just hurt a lot of people. And but go off and change
something?
Because
sometimes it's best for you, right? Should you live your whole life making sure others are happy around you if you're miserable? I mean, that's what I love about it, right? Is I'm miserable, why am I miserable? It could be A, B, or C, or D. Then you make your fucking move, you fuck up. You don't realize, like, oh, shit, I was happy. I was just so far
well, you don't
removed
know that,
from
though.
The situation.
That's what she's saying.
Right.
With, you know, the ex-wife character says... that luck is a component in this decision-making process. Because it's like, you know, the Kenneth Branagh character makes these... I'm going with Branagh. Branagh, right? I'm Americanizing his Irish. So, you know, but the idea that he comes to these decision-making points, and instead of giving it any kind of consideration, he goes, like, wherever his
heart tells
him to go. You know, consequences be damned, and that's why he leaves this, like, this trail of destruction in his wake. You know?
Yeah.
Where it seems like I lost my train of thought. Because now I was
talking about Judy Davis, her character. Well,
I was suddenly thinking about, like, the way to hurt him was the way, you know, through his novel. The way that Famke Janssen actually does it, because when he does break up with her, he's giving her this kind of, like, well, you know, to he doesn't say
you
to minimize the
me
damage.
I'm a...
Yeah, he says, but, you know, I think we can address this rationally and kind of, you know, in order to smooth things over. It's like, well, yeah, you're the one who says you want to break up with her. She just got this information right now, and you're trying to go, like, well, we can all just be, you know, kind of like cool and sedate about this and go, like, you know, okay, handshake, and we're just going to walk
away. You can leave
away.
Your stuff here for a little bit. It's okay.
Yeah,
it's
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, like
that would be easy for him.
Well, like
and
how
so
the...
she gets him back by stealing his fucking completed manuscript that he worked like 5 years and throwing it into the fucking Hudson River.
I like how his ex-wife has the same reaction. Like, when she goes to the screening and runs into Kenneth Branagh at the...
Montaigne?
Never think of his name, yeah. Joe Montaigne.
Montaigne.
I can only do a
Fat Tony.
Yeah, Fat Tony. Oh, yes. How terrible this thing happened. So, but when she does it, she's like, oh, we're so mature now. Well, obviously, we can just kind of whatever. And then when she sees him, she starts fucking flipping out. Because that's what I love about Woody Allen movies. It does seem like a lot of his characters, they're this really sophisticated, like... Or at least that's, I guess that's what he wants, maybe that's his hope, right? Because there's the same scene in Played Against Sam where he's like, oh, you know, this guy's going to freak out when he finds out with his wife. And he imagines that scene where they're just like, you know, oh, I'm dating your wife. Oh, really? Well, you know. Like, just this idea that we as adults understand that people fall in and out of love and love can be picked
up. Yeah,
so
you should be okay with it.
You should just be okay with it. Like, you know, it just happens, you know. So yeah. I like that they really, because a lot of his characters are okay in a lot of his movies. But I like how in this, everybody's just like, fuck no, it's not okay. You know, like, I'm distressed about it. You know, this is like ruined my life. I thought we were in love. But like, even talk about the celebrity. I mean, I like how he goes to Kenneth. What's the fucking character's name?
Lee. For a while there, I was like, what is it?
I like how, I was like, what the fuck? Lee. I like how he at his high school reunion, there's the celebrityism. Here's the guy from our high school class that fucking made it big time. I mean, everything he looks at is people he wishes he was.
What was the subject of his book that he pitches to the publisher when he gets an opportunity? I know it was like about culture and how
like
everybody
the
is a
culture,
celebrity.
Right?
How did he put it? Do you remember?
Oh,
I thought he just said, why do we choose the celebrities we choose,
it's about everybody's famous.
Everyone. Well, was it? I thought that was the second, like the one that the chick approved.
The one, I remember is the one where the publisher comes up to him like later on. It's like, I remember your book. It was about this. And we had just had another author who was just like proposed the same thing that you did. And I would love to see your take on it.
Well, it floated away.
Well, I think it was about how we make things famous.
Well, I think that's genius, right? That the idea that you think Famke
Johnson.
Yeah, Jesus. I need some character names.
Jean Grey,
thank you. Jean Grey. But that scene, they're like, oh, she basically sold his novel idea. And then he's like, oh, she's selling a screenplay. It's like the screenplay he's working on.
Yeah.
Was he talking about the one chick who's like, I write like Chekhov?
Oh,
yeah. Was he talking about her?
I write like him.
I write screenplays.
But once again, she's doing the same thing Lee is doing, right? The fact that, I mean, I get the idea. The only reason he wants to be a writer is to be held to the standard or held up high the way he views all these other celebrities. Mm-hmm. I don't think he really wants to be a writer or a novelist.
But it's a way to
he
get him to that.
He wants people to notice anything about him.
Yeah, that's why he tries to make it in film first, because he thinks people are more into watching.
But that's
movies.
Also why
he's like, oh, it's too hard.
But
to
that's
get a novel.
Also why he moves from woman to woman, because he wants them to notice something about him, and they do. Famke Johnson notices something about him in his novel, but as soon as that comes to fruition, he's just like,
it's bittersweet.
It is.
It's not.
And he's
got to
move
wanted,
on from that.
Know, like,
and then he moves to Winona Ryder, who notices something else about him. And then that wears thin as they go along.
Because once, I mean, this movie doesn't necessarily talk about this, but yeah, what is he, does, are they, do they love the
he's
artist they
celebrity.
Think he is? Or do they love the man that he is? You know, they
well,
really...
the Famke Janssen, I think, loves the man and is encouraging him to be an artist. The Winona Ryder is infatuated by his intense...
Well, the attention she gets.
Yeah.
Well, that and from Charlize, him. Definitely. Charlize wants the attention.
Yeah.
Well, from anybody, really, right? Because, I mean, as soon as the guy... I like how there's that scene where... I mean, he's just going to... I mean, he basically just met this girl... And, you know, she sneezes once and like, oh my God, I need this fucking super hard to get herb. And he's on the phone trying to, I mean, he's fucking doing anything. And then he goes back to the dance floor. She's dancing with this like black athlete guy or whatever. I love that. I love that scene. It's like, I'm sure you've got a huge
career,
schedule
yeah,
or,
yeah,
career
right.
or whatever. Oh my God.
Obvious big black dick joke.
obviously.
Well, the Kenneth Branagh character, I mean, seems to do okay with the ladies. The first time we meet him, he's when he's taking the star Melanie Griffith plays around, you know, like they go back to her house or whatever where she grew up.
My body belongs to my husband. My head, on the other hand.
Yeah, but he's just like, he's got the moves, I guess, whatever. Well, you know, it's like, what?
Well, so he knows, I think... From being some sort of a celebrity journalist, he knows how to play to their egos, right? He knows how to just be like, you're so fucking beautiful. I mean, cause he does. As soon as any woman he meets in this, he just fucking gives it like, oh my God, you're beauty. You're this, you're that. I mean, he just, exudes fucking.
I know it's
worship.
A movie, but I'm just amazed at how often
the women.
That works.
It's also
for him.
It's just it's not. I don't think we can peg it down to women. I think we can peg it down to celebrity because he almost does the same thing with DiCaprio.
Yeah.
When he's going to the meeting with him, he's like describing the screenplay to him, but describing what, like, I know what you can do for this.
Yeah,
and
this is an awesome
like,
part. Yeah,
he doesn't
we
just
gotta
do it to
rewrite
women.
That. You're absolutely
right.
Right.
He doesn't just do it to women. He does it to celebrity. He does it to the thing
he's
seeking.
Holding people at a higher standard
yes.
than he holds himself. So,
yeah,
but,
he,
but
some
that's
that,
what he's going
some
after.
Some of that is the gateway, right? I mean, when he meets,
yes.
you know, Melanie Griffith, he's or sorry, it was the Charlize Theron character, right?
Yeah.
Thing.
That's
the no, it was the Melanie Griffith character.
Charlize
you know, I got, I have this script that you'd be perfect for. I mean, you sit there and you're looking at it because I guess I was mistaking the intention of the movie at the very beginning. Mm. Because she's, all, you know, being approached by people who want an autograph, you know, other hangers-on and how they're pampered on the set, the celebrity, and then they get into a car with this journalist and then he's got something he wants to pitch. Everybody has to be pitching stuff to a celebrity all the fucking time. I mean, you see, you know, the DiCaprio character behaving completely irresponsibly, but, you know, who cares? He's famous. All these people are, like, basically genuflecting to his presence when he walks outside on the street, being arrested even, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I
want to
Can I talk about that for a second? Or
yeah.
You lose your thought. I love that scene where, like, he gets in a, like, a super big fight with she was Matt Damon's wife in Rounders. She was the mother in Boardwalk Empire. Oh, I love that chick. She's
oh, it's Gretchen Mol, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
I think it was.
She was also in Sweet Lowdown. Just the last scene where
yeah, the blonde.
Yeah,
yeah, that's Gretchen Mol. The one was screaming at him.
Yeah. But I like how I mean there's this ultimate fucking fight and like he tried to throw out the window. He was gonna kill her and it's like it fucking kind of looked like it, right? You know, he's this crazy
he's convincing
fucking celebrity.
In that regard, yes.
Oh yeah, he's convincing.
He has
as a
he has the
dick.
Same fight in fucking Wolf of Wall Street.
He does.
With,
he
it's
does.
The same fight.
Yeah. But I like how as soon as he goes outside, she comes running and like I'm not gonna press any charge. I mean, it just shows
right,
how celebrities.
Yeah. And
can
then the hotel
up.
Comes out.
Oh, the hell! Like we're not gonna. It's fine.
We like.
It's fine.
We like.
We want
that you're
his
here.
Fucking money. We want.
Yes, we like his money, the
he's
attention
here.
He's bringing to us. We want that. He
and
likes
the,
this
when
hotel.
When the fucking cop asked for an autograph. Oh, dude.
Yeah.
That was going to arrest her.
Well, like infantilizes celebrities, right? I mean, that's basically why they think that they're able to. I mean, I'm saying this is the movie's thesis. I don't know. You know
I bet
but,
it's right.
You know, the idea that like there are all these pampered children running around like behaving just however you want
like
to
children.
Without. Yeah. Very selfishly, without any regard for the people around you. And, I mean, it's got to be weird, right, though? That everybody, like, comes up to you and wants something from you. Every single person that you meet. Well,
they have, like, a false sense of fucking...
Yeah, how crazy would you be?
Yeah, I know. If that's you, the way because it's like, because I got yeah. to the position I'm in by however I got here, like, everyone else wants to use me as a stepping stone to meet the people that I know.
How crazy would
yeah,
we all
Joe
go?
Even Joe Mantegna's character, even though
yes.
he's very generous,
Joe
his Mantegna. Whole his whole family,
his whole
you know,
family, yeah.
is oh. asking him for favors. Get me into this restaurant. You know, there's a,
right.
there's a six-week wait. Get me Knicks tickets. Get me this. Get
yeah,
me that.
Once again, right? Yeah, how yeah. family views you yeah. as celebrity. I mean, that's what I like about this movie. I like
yeah.
how it takes all these different characters and shows how people either worship them or it just shows what people want out of the celebrity idea.
Well, I always wonder, too, because Woody Allen has to, you know, he has to be somewhat sympathetic to that point of view because he is a celebrity and goes through this shit himself, you know?
Yeah.
So well, he's writing from the inside on that.
Back to Joe Mantegna's character, though. I like how they made one generous celebrity because he said, you know, he didn't have a lot when he was growing up, and he actually enjoys helping his family in that regard, like getting them those favors and
yeah.
doing.
But
all
he's
that
like
for
a producer.
Them.
He's
yeah,
like a behind
but,
the scenes. Mm. He's not like seen as.
But to his right. family, he is.
To his yeah. family, yeah. yeah. There's that's what I like. Yeah, there's all these different because in the same conversation or in the same scene, that's when you have everybody talking to like an older woman who's like a grandmother, and like you don't know this guy. She's like, nah, I don't know him. I mean, that's the scene that shows you how celebrity is a passing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just it's you know,
yeah.
here today, gone tomorrow. Like they could be the biggest fucking shit nowadays, but when we're 80, it's like, hey, who the fuck knows that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's when we're 80, right? It's not necessarily.
No,
you know,
yeah.
your stars are your celebrities are your celebrities. Once you get
yeah.
past a certain age, you don't give a fuck. These people aren't special.
Yeah, I
not,
feel that way
know.
Now, you know, about like up and coming certain celebrities. It's like, I don't know who they are.
Right? You're just like, who? Who the fuck?
Alan Thicke is doing, like, commercials for, I just heard one today. I can't remember what the fuck it was.
No, but
it was
like, pegged yourself to a decade.
Yeah, I'm like, I remember him as the dad on, what was it, Growing Pains. And now, because I'm like, nobody else knows Alan Thicke.
And Robin Thicke got him that job.
They all know him.
Do a favor for my dad, my pa.
But it's just, it's weird that, like, and I'm not even saying that he's, you know, obviously not my generation, but I recognize his work for my generation. But, like, as I get older, I'm like, oh, Alan Thicke, you know, they use him as pitch people now. That's the curse of celebrity, right? Yeah. Well, can they always be your celebrities? I guess that's what you
I mean, this
saying.
Is a, this is going a little
we'll always
outside
know who
of
they
the,
are when we're 80.
A little outside of the podcast, but a lot of actors do commercials, just not in our the country they're popular.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they.
Like, those actors would go off to fucking China or Japan
because
and do
they're
going to
make
ads.
Some fucking. I mean, that's how Sylvester Stallone's made 3 fucking Expendable movies. It's like, hey, do you like toothpaste? Hey, yeah. You know, fuck, you know?
Oh, Colgate's my fucking favorite.
All right, I'm Rocky Balboa, the Italian stallion. Some people say I'm the American dream.
yeah, it's.
But what you said about. Like, even though the ex-wife was talking about how you're lucky in love at the end, I mean, I think that's supposed to be attributed to the celebrity as well, right? You are lucky. You're not special. You're not fucking smarter than anybody. You're lucky. That's all
right.
You
celebrity
are.
didn't bring you to that. Luck will.
Yeah, because they even say, like, what does he say? I think it's Kenneth Branagh that has a that has a line, something about...
Shake your head.
I'm shaking my head.
There's going to be a drinking game.
Kenneth Branagh, the director of Cinderella.
Thor.
Thor.
Branagh.
Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruits.
What?
Oh, true.
What does he say, though? He says something like, or somebody says to him, you know, like, nobody's going to be a celebrity. You're lucky to be, like it was something.
Oh, it was the Andy Warhol thing. You said to maintain.
We're talking about the 15 minutes.
Yeah. Andy Warhol believes that there's a 15 minute. Everybody's famous for 15 minutes. He's like, I don't think most people are famous at all, and some people are for like what he said, like a minute or two.
Yeah, he said I don't think no one's. Or yeah, it was something. It was perfect. Yeah, yeah, it was. It summed it up, which is what Travis is talking about. I
think. Just basically telling his whatever. What's her name?
Judy Davis.
Yeah, just basically telling her how lucky she is. Like, hey, live it up, enjoy it, because it's going to be gone. She is really my favorite character in this whole movie. I just like the idea that she's so fucking... I mean, she to me, is the Woody Allen character. She is the fucking raw nerve of this movie. She is the person that any little thing fucking totally ruins her life, right?
No, she's also the underdog, right? She's the one who's disadvantaged.
And I think that's why I like
she's the one who's got to go from bottom to top.
Yeah.
Especially by from the beginning
her,
to the end of this movie.
Yeah, she does. She gets to the top, right? She becomes one of these celebrity people. That
is that the top? Then is that what it's saying? That
well,
to be a
but,
celebrity,
but
is...
for her,
for
and I think that's
in this reality, right?
But
in this
I think,
town,
and
if you're
I think
in LA,
a, and I think it's a big thing for this movie because it's all about perspective of where you're at, especially when we're like talking about celebrity. It's like celebrity for who? It means different things. Like I think everyone will have their 15 minutes of fame, but it's just on you know different levels.
Yeah.
Like, your fame can be big as, you know, one of the celebrities, or it can be very small within
like
your
the
world.
People.
Right,
the
like, that
people
is
that
15
are,
minutes of fame, but on their
the,
level.
Yeah.
Like, everybody does get that, but I think it's just on different levels.
You got your name in the paper, you were interviewed on the local news.
Right, and that is somebody's 15 minutes of fame.
Right.
But it's just a different level. That is
it's like how you react to it.
Yes,
you,
also
I mean,
that.
She's obviously, at least by the end of this movie, she's a very humble person. You know, she understands her celebrity.
Yes,
she's really fucking humble about it. But you know, other people would, you know, who knows?
Yeah, but I think it also puts like at the start of the movie, like you get Kenneth Branagh more up top and her at the bottom, and then by the end of the movie, it's definitely reversed.
Well,
it
in
is.
A weird, well, he's kind of in the same place, right?
Yeah,
he's in the same place. At the beginning of this movie,
right? Yeah, he starts. Up,
that's why I like how I mean that the
ends in the same place.
The Melanie Griffith movie they're shooting at the beginning of the movie has the airplane writing "Help in the Sky," right? And that's like the last scene you end on is the
and
fact that
yeah,
he's sitting in the theater
the,
by
yeah,
himself.
He's the same spot,
looking at the fucking help sign, you know, because he just like, realized, or at least to me,
right.
It's the filmmaker or whoever realizing like this guy. He's living a fucking fantasy life, you know. He's only worshiping. He only has love for people that he doesn't fucking know.
Mm-hmm.
That he, you know. And he doesn't respond to even his own work because he's too busy worshiping other people to pay attention to his shit, right? He needs a woman there to be like, oh, do it. I love your novel. That's the only way he can work on his novel or his screenplay is if someone's there telling him how great it fucking is. He needs the audience before he can get to the art.
Yeah, but when he wrote that novel, I did get the impression that that wasn't just, you know, him trying to, you know, make something for the whatever.
Fame?
I guess, yeah, the fame for it.
That it would have been something.
Yeah, that one would have been something because it felt like it was genuine, right?
Yes, it was
like
after
kind of prodded him to make something that was genuine. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it, you know, it was like, that's how you, you know, stick it to him by throwing that away. It was like, that's the only way, the only thing that this guy really cares about,
right.
You know, was
his
thing.
His own chance at celebrity. It's his own chance.
Is that
thing.
How you took it or that it was like, this was a genuine thing that he actually, because it was an opinion that he had. You know, it was, I think that was like his.
I took it as more genuine too.
Yeah, this was like a real thing that she coaxed out of him. That
he vomited
up onto pages.
He's breaking her heart and he just has all these like really like logical. And then, but when he sees the manuscripts gone, he's like, hey, I mean, that's where his emotion is.
Right, but everything before that, like.
Even though, I mean, she's getting ready to fucking
marry
him. But the
thing
he created was a real thing.
Yeah,
like,
that's why.
She had, like, he was on the right path. With her, like he created something genuine that was going to be something, and then like something got in the way.
But what if that going to be his celebrity, though? That's what I'm saying. Like, maybe the novel was his real blah blah blah, but that was his chance at celebrity. That was his chance to be with these people that he's been gawking at the whole movie, right?
Mm-hmm. That is also part of it,
like,
but it was also like it was something, it was substantial,
yeah. I think that's the main plot, and then the subplot is that it was something that was his, that he created, that he was proud of, not only to be a celebrity, but he put, you know, at least 2 years into it, and he was proud of it. He actually did something.
Like, he idolizes this celebrity throughout the movie, and, like, he's got this, the thing he created that could, like, put him at that level.
I don't know. Well, I think I'm with Travis on this one. I think that he is... Because there's so many scenes of him being so superficial and so, what would you call it? I mean, I guess just you know, basically adoring the celebrity. I don't think that there's anything genuine about the guy. I mean, there's the scene at the, like, his whole big, like, midlife crisis is when he goes back to his high school reunion and he sees how old everyone has gotten. And that he's like, oh, man, I'm old, too. I need to get a hot, young, you know, sleazy girl like the girl up on stage.
Yeah, why am I married to this chick that makes me miserable when I should be fucking some blonde dumbass, you know, that this guy's with?
But I think that's his downfall.
Well, that's absolutely his downfall. But, I mean, I don't think that, like, whether or not what he wrote in that book, in that novel is worth a damn, I don't know.
I think it would have been. Like, I think the movie builds it up to say that something like what he was onto was something that would have been worthwhile. But he threw it away because of, you know, obviously going after Winona Ryder rather than sticking with Famke Johnson. Like,
so,
I think...
So, like, the novel's a metaphor for the story within that.
He had his opportunity to become the celebrity, but he threw it away to... go with someone who viewed him as the celebrity.
Well,
that
he still wanted to worship. He still wanted to
worship.
But, right, right.
And not, like, actually take the time to become an appreciated artist.
Right. Yes, and he threw it away because of that, because he wanted to worship it. But I think the novel is what would have made him that, but he threw it away to continue worshiping it. And that's when Famke Johnson's throwing shit away. Like, he has that opportunity, but he throws it away.
I wonder how easy or difficult it is to be an actor in a Woody Allen movie, because...
I feel you got to be sweating bullets on set every day. It feels like to
me. Yeah, because it seems like a Tarantino movie or some writer that we attribute long sections of, you know, paragraphs. Where it's like, you're on screen, you're going to be talking for like 3 or 4 pages. Instead of just like, help, it's over there, go there.
It's so emotional to me that, like, I don't know, not that I'm saying, I think it'd be easy, but it just seems like... Everything's so emotional that it seems like it wouldn't be a big deal to, like, step on each other's lines, to mess up a little bit, because you're so frantic and talking with somebody or whatever.
But is that even ad-libbing? Or is it like these are the actual scripted
lines?
Feels
like there's a lot of rehearsal to me.
Yeah, I'm sure
like
because it is. I think Woody Allen does direct plays, right? Because that's obviously what Woody Allen was a comedian that started writing plays, then started making movies. Because obviously that's where the money is, or whatever the fuck. But so I think he still took everything he learned about playwriting into filmmaking.
Yeah, because you can almost in watching this movie, you can almost if you're watching the camera movement, you can if the camera were just to like. Go back 20 feet and just to view it as a play. Like, it could be.
Yeah.
Like, that's how
Which
it
I would
is.
Say that's a lot of his earlier films do that. Mm. A lot of Woody Allen's earlier films directs like that, where you put the fucking camera back, you can really see, like, usually a ceiling to the, like thigh shot of a lot of people, and you're really just, you know, people walking back and forth talking over each other. A lot of this stuff does have that 1930s film noir or play type of...
Well, I think I asked you this before on the last Woody Allen podcast, but I don't remember your answer. Has Woody Allen ever written a novel or, like, published anything that wasn't a stage play or a screenplay?
I mean, he's got... He does have, like, three novels, but they're not, like, novels. They're all, like, either... comedic short story. I mean, they're just ideas, really. I mean, I don't think he's ever written
fiction. I suppose, like a fiction.
Yeah, but they're usually
something
like,
meant for
but it's almost like
read,
the way
performed.
Most comedians write novels is the way his novels are, right? Where you're taking a lot of your ideas that maybe you couldn't figure out a bigger thing for it, and you're just wanting to, you know, show people some of your slight ideas. Or so he does have three books, but they're not. You know, they're not novels. I mean, he does have some plays that weren't turned into movies.
I can't imagine him writing a novel. Like, I imagine everything he writes needs to be performed.
Really?
That's what it feels like.
That's
what he's in my limited interaction with Woody Allen. Like, it feels like the things he writes need to be performed by somebody.
Yeah. Is it because of the joke? Because he writes comedies. This is a comedy.
Everything he does.
I mean,
this
it's
is
dramatic,
what
but it's a comedy. I mean, there's jokes and punchlines, setups and punchlines. You know, well, I was going to propose to you, or I was going to ask you to marry me, or what do you want for dinner tonight? Like spaghetti.
Yeah,
I was
that,
gonna,
yeah, that was funny.
I was going to ask you to marry me.
Penne. With the sauce. Yeah, that's funny.
But once again, I love that idea that like. You know, once again, being struck with celebrity when he meets Winona Ryder, or like when he meets her again at the end, and she's like, "Oh, you know, a lot of people think they can like hold me down and they can get me to be faithful and whatnot." But once again, his mind is just fucking working and working and working. That
well,
like,
he's
oh,
not
yeah,
listening
can...
to her. He's projecting the image again. You know, I think that's the core of celebrity worship.
Projecting
the image onto the person. It's not the actual person.
And he does
want
a boring
marriage. Then
when he
finds out who she actually is, she's
you know,
not that person.
Yeah, yeah. Every celebrity he meets doesn't want that boring marriage. But he really, even though he feels like he doesn't want it, or he thinks he doesn't want it, it's almost like he wants the boring marriage, but with an exciting person. Yeah. That's almost what it is, right? Like his ex-wife wasn't good enough because she's a normie, right? She's just a normal person, blah, 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 blah. But I think he
why Famke Janssen wasn't good enough for him, I don't know.
Yeah, I Winona Ryder Famke Janssen, I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Pick your battles, buddy.
Yeah, that woman
but then again,
but
like I said, she liked him, which he drove away. The most
right.
the way all
yeah,
other celebrities
it.
Do. You fucking if he feels love, it's wasted
Done.
On him. You know, it's
Done.
Like ah, you know, it's nothing he needs to strive for, right?
Well, that seems to be one of the Woody Allen like I mean, again, man, I don't know, but it definitely is characters, like a defining characteristic, right? I mean, in most of his movies that we've watched, it feels like that's the way that it goes, right? It's like once it's like there's the unattainable person or item or whatever, and once you get it, then, you know, then there's no more mystery, there's no more excitement, and then something else. I mean, that's
which
his...
is really everything, right? I mean, even if you can't wait to go see a movie next Friday, you have in your mind what it's going to feel like, how excited you're going to be, how happy you're going to be after the movie. Then you fucking see it and you're like, huh, well, that's fucking dumb. Reality sucks. You know, reality was nowhere near what I thought.
We're not talking about Star Wars, okay?
Yeah, yeah. I was actually thinking about me and Colin here went to Chicago to see a band, right? It was Goblin. which is like this was their first fucking American tour ever. They've been like a band for horror movies since the fucking 60s. And when we were there, I was like, this is surreal. I'm not really here. I had this whole idea. What's it going to be like to fucking see Goblin live in concert? Oh my God. All these famous horror movies, soundtrack songs, and blah, blah.
With a name like Goblin. Dude. It has to be good.
And they're all old and they don't look like themselves.
But sitting there, it's like I almost wasn't there. I almost wasn't there because it's just like, fuck, this is nowhere near how excited I was. Like all the fucking week before driving up there, you know, you're like, oh boy.
You're better off with the CD.
You're better off with your own imagination most of the time. You know, you're better off fucking experiencing things you're excited for, you know? And I mean, sure a lot of people have had that with either dates or like marriages or something like that, where it's just like, oh my God, I've waited so long to be with this person.
But that's like, what this movie, I think, is arguing against, right? Isn't that it's saying if you dream up the image, nothing can ever
match up to it.
Well, yeah, they both go through that. Even Judy Davis, she comes to a point where everything in her life is basically perfect.
You motherfucker.
Yeah, and she's just like, she doesn't even know what to do because she's expecting something terrible to happen because that's what happened in her last marriage, and it doesn't, and then she ends up fucking it up because... Yeah. She's so paranoid about
she's
it.
She's afraid that she can't live up to the image.
Yeah.
Right? Because she's not even asking the guy what he thinks of her at all. It's just that he, you know, I'm lucky that. I'm lucky that, you know, I found him or whatever, and, like, I can't live up to that. And that, like, just makes her implode.
Yeah, she keeps saying, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then that, her doubting herself. Is the other shoe?
Well, that's interesting then, right? So that is doing that from the both sides of the coin.
Tony's most enlightened sister,
psychic ever. Like for $10, like she changed her life.
You need a psychic. You need a therapist.
Yeah. And she got a drink out of it.
And I like the way that you know he shoots this stuff, where it's like she goes in to talk to this psychic, and I don't even remember what that psychic looks like because there's no reverse
Tony
shots.
Soprano's sister.
On the woman herself. It's all you're just looking at Judy Davis in close up as she's reacting to hearing, you know, this information from the psychic.
There's some close ups of the psychic.
Are there? Don't even remember.
No, there
don't
are.
Even remember.
There are close-ups of the psychic.
Well, then there you go. The whole thing.
Like that's that's the thing. Like he wants to make you see that.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he wants you to remember. Like her, not even just her reaction to what the psychic is saying.
Yeah,
her,
yeah, yeah.
Her realization of what she should be doing.
Yeah. That's what the point he wants. Of the scene.
That's the point.
But I think you can only get that through like a good performance.
Woody Allen does that. I don't necessarily know. Like, what's he trying to say there? He always has people saying, are you going to a shrink? Are you going to a shrink? I mean, a lot of his characters in all of his movies fucking go to shrinks and psychoanalysts and whatnot. But then they also, a lot of times, end up going to fucking psychics and shit. Like, really weird, like, I don't know if that just
Isn't
comes
Scoop
from...
Isn't Scoop a lot about that?
A little bit about that.
A little bit, like, that's an element?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, he has a lot of movies that talk about going to see psychics. Yeah. But I think that
question, whenever that happens, are the psychics always, like, wise?
They're more therapeutic than they are, like, magically fucking inclined.
Yeah, but the experience of going to see the psychic somehow unlocks...
It's revelatory?
You know, yeah, for the main character.
In a weird way, it's all... Because I think it's almost the same thing as going to a therapist, right? You're looking... Or if anything, you just want someone to tell you what to fucking do, regardless of their...
Right,
of
it's,
whatever education
it's
they have.
Indecisiveness, and then going to see someone that's like, well, you should do this, because I'm
or
smart,
somebody
and
that
I can tell you
somehow,
what to do.
Yeah, somebody... Somebody that you see as an authority on like reality or what you're supposed to do, regardless of whether it's
this
scientific
person's licensed,
or spiritual.
They can tell me what to feel about this and how
as
to
as long as
proceed.
It agrees with what I already thought was there. It's just a confirmation.
Like when she walks in and she's like, she says a name and she's like, oh, that name is exactly what I was. You know,
that was I'm seeing the word Beowulf.
Yeah.
Oh, I taught Chaucer, and like, what? How did?
Yeah. How,
okay,
how
it's a literary thing. That's all it has in common. Yeah. But she's like, oh,
yeah,
wants, it must be for me. Because
you want it. Yeah. That's what you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, is that?
So is that
it?
I think it's it.
Are we ready to wrap it?
I think
wrap it up.
Well, good God, man! Do you know? Whoa, wait! Sorry, we have to summon Igor because we do actually have some mailbag.
Igor.
Brana!
Igor! Brana! Igor!
Igor!
Bring me the mail!
Masters! Masters, the mail! I've got the mail! So many letters! Our followers are rising! Rising!
Why, thank you, Igor.
handsome guy. Handsome guy.
He's very good looking. He's very good looking.
So on last week's episode, last week we watched a movie called Spookies.
Spookies!
Wait, was that last week? Last week was Black Christmas. Sorry,
last
two
week was
weeks
back,
ago.
Yeah, Black Christmas was last
right.
week.
So
Spookies.
Spookies.
On Facebook, which is facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show, Nick Hammond writes in and says,
Nick.
Listening to this podcast as I type this, and you got me screaming, planchette. It's called a planchette. The Ouija board device.
Oh.
The Platon. Sorry.
Sure.
It's the planchette.
The pointer.
Yeah.
The pointer.
I think that's
we stand
maybe
corrected.
The planchette.
Yeah. Maybe Nick could be our new corrections department.
There you go.
Right, right. Nick is our research department.
Corrections?
Nick, what did we fuck up? All right. Point us in the right direction.
How to pronounce Kenneth Branagh.
If they don't say the fucking movie, I've got no point of reference.
Yeah.
Well, Nick has another, he did some more looking stuff up for us. Do you remember that we were talking about 80s toys during Spookies? That they looked like, or something like
yeah,
that.
Sure. The, what are they called?
Madballs.
Boglins.
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 What's
that's
a boglin?
What they're called.
Boglins.
Does he have a picture of a
boglin? Oh, awesome.
He's got a picture of a boglin.
A boglin.
They're awesome.
Go.
I was going to go with goofballs.
It's caged.
I still like goblins with the Z.
I knew it sounded
Drool.
Something like goblins, but yeah. Boglins.
I was, I think, boglins, I think, what is it, madballs?
Yeah,
oh,
that more applies to me because that's the thing that hit me. But boglins,
yeah, but boglins. I mean, they were genius. That's definitely one of my favorite.
Look at that! It's like it's caged, just trying to get out.
Yeah,
I like
dude,
it.
You
I like
control,
it.
Control the mouth and the eyes.
Right, I like it.
Oh, I
they were awesome.
Those.
Yeah, boglins. Had to a fucking boglins. Like little monster guy.
Right?
Yeah.
Anything
dude,
you
awesome.
Could, yeah.
Jenny
if you could sell to little kids, like, look, it's a little monster. Ah.
Jenny was not even born.
I think you were born. Yeah. I was
oh,
gonna
God.
Say, like, I think those were discontinued by the time you came around.
They're remaking those, right? Boglins?
I don't know. They should. Fuck, that's a genius
they should,
story.
Right?
So then
the wrap-up right. then for tonight's start, movie
short
starts
and sweet.
With Travis.
Celebrity.
Short and sweet. I fucking love Woody Allen. He's the guy, if you're really not into fucking artsy-fartsy movies, but you do kind of want something a little intellectually advanced, that's why you go for Woody Allen movies. The
at least you can laugh at it.
You can, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why I like his movies. I like how they're so diverse in a weird way, right? They always have major drama. They always have fucking comedy. They always make you think you want to go out and buy a Billie Holiday record, and then you're like, no, it's just the movie. It's just you know, the nostalgia of it. But I don't know. I mean, he's my favorite guy, so I fucking... I want to say out of like 50 movies, I maybe don't like 5 of them, so of course I like Celebrity. Of course I'm going to recommend it to everybody. So that's my wrap-up. Short and sweet.
I also really like this movie. I had never seen a Woody Allen film before tonight.
Whoa.
Whoa.
No, Woody Allen. None?
Whoa.
No, Woody Allen.
Travis, get back here.
Hey, I
told him earlier.
I was there with you. I was there with you at one point during this podcast. Like, I haven't seen a Woody Allen
I've
movie.
Listened
what
to the
like?
Podcast
now
you guys have done, but
now
I haven't
seen like
one.
Three.
And honestly, going until last week when Brent announced that he was doing this, I didn't know this was a Woody Allen film. But I really liked it. I like the way he writes his characters. He writes these scenarios, and I know they're oftenly repeated. That's what you guys have said. But it's so the audience can relate to him at some level. And I do like movies like that. At some level, maybe not... all of his, you can't relate to all the movies, but I think it targets certain right. people.
But you'll find it, yeah.
Yeah. And I really, I enjoyed this movie a lot, and it is intellectually stimulating, like Travis was saying, and quirky, and I like the punchlines and the yes. clever humor. So yes, I would also recommend this movie.
Yeah, I've never been disappointed by a Woody Allen movie thus far. I mean, like, my, yeah. My exposure to them has been limited, but like, I've always enjoyed them. I'm willing to see more. This is a fun movie. I always enjoy his movies. So yeah, I definitely recommend this one. And you know, I look forward to watching more Woody Allen. Bring it on.
Holy shit.
Whether it be Travis or Brent or anybody. Let's Colin, bring a Woody Allen movie to the podcast.
My favorite Woody Allen movie?
Let's do it. I recommend it. Like, keep watching Woody Allen. I'm sure you'll find something that you don't necessarily like, but keep looking. You'll probably find something that's right up your alley. So
I did really
I recommend
like,
it.
What was it? Crimes and Misdemeanors.
That's a great fucking
movie. I think, yeah. And I haven't seen some of his suspense movies, which I'm told I should.
He has suspense movies? With actual suspense?
And what's the other one? Yeah, they're not comedies. They're like straight ahead. Like he's done many. Well, I wouldn't say genre stuff. He steers away from genre. It feels like, right? I mean, he does.
Does he? He seems like pinpoint on genre to me. But again, I've only watched a couple movies. But
well, we're not saying the drama is a genre,
sure.
Right? I mean, what else?
Yeah.
Like straight comedy. I mean, maybe you know.
They seem more comedic. Off the bat. If they veer off from that, that is different than what I've experienced.
I mean,
thus far.
What I could think of, I think his more serious movies would be Match Point, Interiors, which, I mean, I don't even fucking like Interiors. It's too serious. Fuck, what else, man?
What was that new one that, what's her face was nominated
Kate
for?
Kate Blanchett?
Yeah.
Blue Jasmine. Yeah, that's straightforward.
Yeah,
that's
that seems
not,
more straight.
That's not like, it's not a thriller or nothing. But
no,
it's
but it seems more dramatic
a
little bit.
Fucking movie.
Yeah.
Brilliant movie.
Well, the guy's been making movies for, what are we saying, 40 years?
Every year since 1975
Woo!
Or some shit.
And he's got
wow.
How many movies in the bank?
Every year since 1975. I mean, like over 50 by now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's why it's like, fuck, if you don't like one of them, hey, 40. Move on to the next one. Because fucking
right.
Dude's
you'll
got
find
plenty
something.
Of them.
Well, that seems to be the thing, I guess, that I mean, he's an interesting filmmaker. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And, you know... I guess to address, you know, Sean's point, it's like that he's, you know, I too have seen Woody Allen movies through Travis and now Brent for bringing this, you
who
know,
knew?
Where it's like, I sit there and I'm like, I'm never really disappointed by them because, you know, this is the Saturday Night Freak Show and you really can't compare a movie like Spookies or Black Christmas to a movie like Celebrity or, you know, Deconstructing Harry or whatever. I mean, like, it is a better movie.
Yes.
Because it's, you know, because of its emotional truth, I guess. Intellectual truth. It's dramatic.
Thematic elements.
It's talking about real human, you know, stuff where, you know, I mean... You can like Star Crash. I like Star Crash.
Right, you can like Star Crash. But.
Yeah, as like, this is your bad junk food, but, you know, I mean, if you actually want something, a meal to chew on, then that's probably going to be something that Woody Allen does. I guess the thing that... I think Woody Allen and Tarantino, I brought those two up earlier, but I think that they're in the same kind of boat because we have... These two guys who are working now, there's others. I'm sorry, I'm not thinking of them right now. But the idea that, you know, these guys are writers first. They're film directors second, right? It's just weird that you have, like, John Grisham or your Gillian Flynn's or, you know, your Stephen King, aside from Maximum Overdrive. I mean, they write these
wait
things.
Wait for it.
But they're not, they can't translate them to cinema. Right?
Mm.
But Tarantino and Woody Allen, like, they actually, like, that's their medium, you know? Even though they're writing very literary stuff, it feels to me. I mean, I know we're saying that, you know, this wouldn't maybe translate well to a book, but, I mean, even the density of his dialogue and, you know, the characters and their interactions seems, you know, it's a lot more to chew on than you get in... I mean, what are we talking about? Like 99% of the movies that are made, at least in American movies, it probably has, like, you know, when foreign movies are imported here, it seems like you have a little more of the human element.
Which I think he,
yeah, right,
personally,
yeah,
really influenced a lot of.
And
I
the
mean,
producer
that's why
on
he's
this
more
is French.
He lives in Paris now, right? Because I mean. Those are the people that fucking really, really appreciate
him.
Yeah,
cinema as an
Paris
a
is
medium
an extra
for
date, right?
the conveyance of an idea, you know, more than the I don't know if you got, you know, like, so you, that you'd use cinema to transfer ideas from a mind to another mind. Mm. And that's the delivery device, rather than just the thrill and the spectacle of seeing shit blow up. And, you know, it seems like, you know, Woody Allen and the French maybe are
the
more.
French.
Woody Allen and the French.
Dude,
copyright 2015. Woody Allen and the French.
Woody Allen and the French.
Yeah. Yes. However, the danger here in the fact that, like, where Woody Allen makes a movie a year, and you've got, you know, Tarantino, you got to wait like 4 years or whatever to get his thing. It seems like he's got an idea. You know, Tarantino comes up with an idea and then refines the shit out of it until you get the best possible version of that idea, and then he's going to move on to something else to tackle. Where Woody Allen seems to be addressing the same idea, not always. I mean, you're talking about 50 movies or whatever the hell, you know, he's going to do different things. Anybody, you know, you'll like this one, even if you don't like this one. But it does to me seem like of the sampling that I've had of his stuff that, you know, you are kind of watching the same movie again, over and over and over again, or the same people going through this, grappling with the same issues. So, you know, with 50 movies, you get to pick the one that you like the best. And Celebrity, to me, did feel, I mean, we found out it was like 2 hours long, but it felt like it was 3 hours. I just didn't really respond to it as far as, like, you know, it's not my favorite iteration of the Woody Allen struggle, you know, if that. So I don't know if I would recommend this as, like, you got to see it, you know, as, like, this is the one. If you're looking for the story that he tells about this, that, you know, I don't know if this is it, but I still recognize that it is a very well put together piece of dramatic art.
I was don't
that?
Know if
do
that's
you recommend
a
it?
Recommend.
I do
you
recommend
yeah.
it. God damn it, we have one
no.
criteria on the show.
No.
Insane.
Everyone's entitled to their own opinion.
No more. Not anymore. Colin ruined that forever.
Oh, shit. Didn't recommend it.
No, it was the most. It was. You know what it was? It was Kenneth Branagh breaking up with Jean Grey. It was like, it was the best, most subtle way, you know, most polite way to say that. No, I don't. I'll never watch this movie again. I'm not saying that. That's what Colin. I'm guessing you'll never watch this again.
No.
Okay.
No, I've done it. It was good.
But he said it was good.
Then when he gets it, he hates it. I don't get this guy.
He said it was good. Yeah.
Why would he recommend it?
All right.
What happened to your childhood?
It felt like it was 5 hours long. It went from 3 to 5. That. Yeah.
He went from 3 to 5. I think that some of the things that Colin is touching on are true. I think that, like, Woody Allen and Tarantino are very similar in their it's a writing style that should be in a novel or on a stage probably before it's in a film. But, I mean, I think it's something that America right now is starved. Like, American cinema, I think we're starved of that. Like, it's out there. But the more and more we get, the more, you know, you're inundated with all of these superhero movies. Mm-hmm. And not that that's a bad thing. But I think I've always thought that that's...
It's a nice meal versus getting an ice cream treat.
But, it's, well, and it's
just different.
It's pushing out the... You know, with every extra, it's not just superhero movies, but with every blockbuster movie like that comes along, and every spectacle, I think it's pushing out the, you know, the would be celebrity movies or the little movies that.
Well, people obviously don't like it.
Make it. And
it's not even those movies. I don't think it's just the volume of them. If everything becomes that, then you push out the. You know, I mean, I like the having the variety of. Choice, I guess.
And
you don't have that anymore.
And I know, I mean, the listener at home will probably argue that you get that with, you know, with on demand or, you know, through Netflix or there's so many more outlets for making movies now that you can still find it if you look for it. But I don't think that as a whole, I don't think our society, you know, responds to the celebrity. Not to say that that's what's going on in Colin's case, because I know he watches things that are way more intellectual and more deep than this. He's saying no, but
Star Crash, dude.
Yeah, Star Crash. He brought Star Crash to us.
He watches movies like this and just hates them when he watches them. I don't get it.
But
it makes me feel smart. Ugh, I reject it.
I think that with Woody Allen, you get, and we say, you know, it's the same themes. I mean, you get Woody Allen's personality in all of his films, whether it be, you know, and it is a neurosis, but it's there in everything. Whether it almost feels like he's always like trying to, like we said earlier, like it's therapy. Like he's trying to work on a different part of his life, his worries. I mean, he's definitely, I mean, this dude's...
What he's worried about at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, well, maybe, you know, I mean, whatever in his, like, it's every year, you know, I mean, so he always has something new coming
out. Yeah, and the filmmaker's like, what am I feeling at the time? Like, this is what I feel, and this is what I'm going to put into this.
I don't think he is doing any film reflecting on his own personal life. I mean, when you have a boy and a girl character, these are just the natural things every man and woman go through. I don't think these are anything doing with his own person. That's putting too much of the filmmaker into his own movie, where you can't be like, Rob Zombie obviously wants to kill everybody because that's all he does. Quentin Tarantino just wants to say nigger and shoot people. That's all he does. I don't think just because other movies are more intellectual than other movies, we can start saying, well, that's him. That's him working out things. But then other people aren't doing that. And they're like, this is still entertainment. He's just doing what he believes, to me, at least personally, what he thinks are the most realistic circumstances that men and women go through in relationships.
Absolutely. And I think that you write what you know. And when I say that it's his personality, he's dealing with things that everyone deals with. I mean, we can all identify with his movies because everybody goes through the stories that he tells. I mean, it's not so personal that, I mean, I guess it kind of is only in the fact that he puts a character of himself into it, you know, so like Tarantino, you get his voice, like or Kevin Smith or Woody Allen. You get Woody Allen's voice. Not that he is; it's just him projecting, or you know, people projecting at. I guess maybe I'm projecting on the movie, saying that it's just Woody Allen. But I'm picking up things out of it that I'm assuming is part of his life because he's writing things that have maybe happened. But, like, it's things that I can identify in my own life. And I think that all of us can identify with that, you know? I mean...
But all of his characters succumb to infidelity, like, across the fucking board.
Because that is your id, right? Woody Allen, the Woody Allen character in all of his movies, right? The guy that acts like the Woody Allen comedic character... That's the little voice inside of you. That's why he's such a fucking neurotic, because the little voice in all our heads is a fucking neurotic.
Yeah.
It's always, what do I do? Should I do this? But if I do this, I'm
it's always the questioning voice.
Yeah, it's
always
the questioning voice. It's nothing, you're not ever fucking
every decision you make, it's always that little voice that's saying, well, what if you did this? Or what if you did this?
Yeah,
it's like,
I think that's
what should you do? Like Woody Allen is that voice.
Yeah, and whether or not that's him for real, I don't know, but. I mean, his stories always have that, and
I think he's identified that voice is asking a question, and he's putting it down.
I think he's aware of the subconscious
he's aware of it happening
battle between any of your decisions. I don't think that's him because, like I said, this is a
It's not him
really
making a choice one way or another. It's him identifying that there is a voice deciding if there is a choice.
Yeah,
like,
it's not him making the
voice.
Right. It's not him making the choice. There's a voice that is trying to decide.
I don't even
this
think it's
or that.
His voice.
No,
it's
not
just,
his.
He just
it
knows
is everybody's.
That everyone has this.
It's
fucking,
somebody.
What do I do? Go here. Go there. Go here. Go there.
Right.
Should
the identification
eat this,
of that.
Eat that. I mean, there's questions to every. You could always go both ways on any fucking decision. A million decisions in your lifetime. Yeah. There's always going to be.
He's
that,
just giving that thing a voice.
But the personification is him. I mean,
yes.
In the Kenneth Branagh role.
Right.
But that's still
more
his,
specific
that's
to
still
yes.
a character. That's still the same. If Jerry Lewis was to write the old lady and other people were to play that, that's what that is. That's not Woody Allen. Woody Allen is not that guy. This is a character he created as a comedian to give his stories out. You know, you need a character, right? Paul Rubens is not fucking Pee Wee Herman. You know what I mean? Even though maybe some things Pee Wee Herman says.
It's an aspect of Paul Rubens. Like,
maybe.
But when you've done 50 fucking movies and they all have the same guy, well, again, all is relative, but have the same guy as their lead. And at some point, it's like that's money, all you know how to write because that is the most personal of the things that you're writing. That is you.
But well,
it's a dream.
I wouldn't
version
say
of
that
you,
is you though. I just wouldn't. I think that's blurring the line of filmmaker and art. I just think that's a little too like who the fuck makes movies about themselves like that? I just don't
Woody
think.
Allen.
Or he knows
see,
how to put out.
The,
or
that.
He
that's
knows
why
how
why
to put out that voice.
That.
But I think that I mean everybody has an unlimited well inside of them to just write about themselves, and he's brilliant, so he can do it. And I mean it's not the same story every time. It's different aspects of what you know the human condition really. You know, in your head, yeah.
Like yeah.
You said, it's what everybody I think that actually
fucking
feels
guy's brilliant
that way.
And a story.
And I'm agreeing with you there, definitely. I think that he is a brilliant writer and director. I think more so writer, but this movie stood out with the direction. More so, like, I haven't, like, I guess Bullets Over Broadway, I noticed, like, feeling cinematic, but this one felt really cinematic.
Have you seen Manhattan?
I haven't seen Manhattan, yeah.
That is his fucking, like...
Well, maybe next.
Maybe.
Next time. Maybe I should go on a Woody Allen kick for 2016.
Oh God, for every whole year.
Everybody in this audience should.
God, that's a long year,
dude. That's a quick. Long year. Yeah. You will watch all his movies in a heartbeat.
Yeah, yeah, dude. No,
but no, I felt
crazy. I don't believe this.
It's not just it's not just the black and white, but I think that. Just where he puts the camera, and maybe it's Sven doing it too, his director of photography. But it's just it felt more interesting when you're doing a play like film, you know, where it's dialogue heavy to keep the audience interested. Not that the dialogue's not interesting, but to keep them interested when they know that they're going to the cinema and they're going to watch a fucking movie. You want like movement and stuff, and I think that this movie it does it in a very creative. Refreshing way, in the world that we live in 2015, the last week of 2015,
this is actually 2016.
Oh shit!
you gotta look behind the curtain.
In 2016,
it all comes crashing down.
You know, when we've got superheroes aplenty in Star Wars, not to. Cut down on Star Wars, but I think that sometimes you need a Woody Allen film every once in a while. So,
palate cleanser.
Yeah, it's something that you know it taps into a different part of your brain.
A Rational Man on video, February 2nd or something like that. That's the
yeah.
Next one.
Yeah, so there's more coming, folks. I mean, yeah, if you know, there's all sorts of Woody Allen films out there, and the themes are the same, or you know, slightly similar.
This is how we begin. This is how we begin the year, right? Like this. Mm-hmm. Is, this. Oh shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
This
might
be tone.
The year of Woody Allen. This is crazy. I don't believe this.
So I would definitely recommend it and watch it.
Well, there you go. So that's a wrap up on Celebrity from Woody Allen on the Saturday Night Freak Show. Next week, it's going to be my pick. I'm going to do this to myself. You're all going to sit there. I'm going to sit against an entire panel of people who hate this fucking
great
movie.
Fuck you.
But we're going to watch Ryan Gosling in Nicholas Winding Refn's Only God Forgives. And that's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, the basement is going dark.